proceed when you're ready.
Judge, I do have the guardian ad litem here.
Okay.
He filed the written notice in accordance with the statute to make oral argument. I'd like to yield 3 minutes of my time to the guardian ad litem.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And you're Mr. Working, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. And thank you, I should say. Thank you for serving as a guardian ad litem. The court appreciates that. All right. Mr. Tittimeri, please proceed when you're ready.
Yes, Your Honor. Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Michael Tittimeri here for Sandra Perry. As I indicated in my brief, there are a number of assignments of error I believe occurred. The first and foremost, Judge, is assignment of error number one, that the court erred when it found that Ms. Snipes was a fit parent at the time that the hearing occurred.
Counsel, let me ask you about that, if I can.
Yes.
This comes up on a regular basis. I'm not sure if we've ever squarely addressed the question in connection with these kinds of cases, but there's a statutory presumption of fitness.
Yes.
And it's the obligation of you and your client to rebut that presumption.
Yes.
Given that we're not fact finders, and given that the circuit court is the fact finder, how could we ever address as a matter of law whether a presumption is rebutted, because without becoming substitute fact finders ourselves? I mean, granting that if I had been the circuit court in this case, I might have done something very different. That, of course, is not
right.
The standard of review for us. So,
yes,
so given that there's a presumption of fitness and it's your burden to overcome that at the circuit court level, how could we ever say a circuit court erred in concluding you failed to carry your burden to rebut the presumption? I mean,
in this particular case, Judge, I believe it comes from the letter opinion itself, because the court in its letter opinion on page 2 and page 3 found that we did establish by clear and convincing evidence a number of things. And when you look at those things, those factual findings, which are 23 paragraphs long, don't lead to the logical conclusion that Ms. Snipes was a fit parent.
What page are you on? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Judge. The it would be page 18 and 19 of the appendix.
Okay, thank you.
That's the circuit court's letter opinion where he made his findings. And he specifically states in that letter opinion that we have established by clear and convincing evidence the following things. They talk about how the child was exposed to hepatitis C in utero and that she didn't seek to have the child tested to find out whether he had it. They talk about the fact that she failed to have the child vaccinated as the pediatrician had recommended.
But for us to get to where you want us to go, would we not have to write an opinion that effectively says, if you establish this set of facts, you are, as a matter of law, can never be a fit parent, no matter what other mitigating circumstances there might be in the trial court, or circuit court, I should say, identified some mitigating circumstances as well that it also put on the balance scale. So we would have to say, it seems to me, and maybe you tell me a way around it, but it seems to me we would have to say in every single case where a child has been exposed to hepatitis or whatever, that parent can never be, as a matter of law, a fit parent.
I don't believe so, Judge. I think that the facts in this case, when you take all of the facts and circumstances lumped together, you could say that under this particular fact pattern, that it does not lead to the conclusion.
Well, that's my point. That makes us fact finders when we do
that. Is it that you could say or you have to say? Because if it's you could say, then the standard review would dictate that we affirm if reasonable minds could differ. It would have to be as a matter of law that no reasonable fact finder could reach the conclusion that you could overcome the standard review.
I think the issue, Judge, is that the particular facts of this case are unlikely to be repeated again. As the court's well aware, every case like this that comes before the circuit court is going to be different factually.
So we're going to say, as a matter of law, only in this case and nowhere else ever at any point in time in the future would this law ever apply.
Correct, and I think it goes to the reason that the court cited to essentially award her custody despite all of the findings that I just mentioned to you about the fact that she was buying her Suboxone on the street, that she was testing positive for marijuana while she was in the court.
Those facts aren't necessarily unique.
I understand that. But what the circuit court used to overcome them was that she had been married for 2 days. he gave some weight to that in the letter opinion. In fact, cited it as one of his four reasons. I don't believe that in any situation that marriage for 2 or 3 days is going to amount to overcoming a mountain of evidence against you. Like I said, 23 paragraphs of essentially negative comments about mom. That she had had another child for a period of 2 months when this child was years old at the time that we went to court. Again, I don't believe that just simply the fact that she had another child, when there was no other evidence presented, Judge, about how she had been raising that child or what had been going on, there was very little evidence about that child other than the fact that she had one.
But you understand that when you come up here and you're essentially trying to relitigate the facts, the difficulty that you face when it comes to the standard of review.
I absolutely am aware of the standard of review and the difficulty that we face here in this court. I make it very blunt to my clients what the challenges are when we come here.
One of the difficulties we face in these cases, with termination cases generally as well, is it's not hard. Social workers do this all the time. It's not hard to identify people that might be better parents.
Sure.
Of course, that's not the standard. We don't lightly take kids away from their parents because we can find a better set of parents out there. If that
sure.
were the case, I certainly wouldn't have any children, probably. They'd belong to somebody else. But the law is that, you know, presumptively, you're entitled to raise your own children, and it takes a very, very high bar to get over.
Correct.
Before. And ultimately, we're not the judges of when that bar has been reached. That's the circuit court's job. We can only determine whether or not they erred as a matter of law in doing so. And given whenever there's a situation where there's a presumption in effect, basically, you know, unless you get over that bar, the parent wins every single time. It's sort of in the nature of an affirmative defense. How would we ever, as a matter of law, say you have prevailed on an affirmative defense? That's ultimately up to a fact finder to determine because the presumption is always going to be against you. And this is an analogous kind of situation, it seems to me.
I think the problem is that the circuit court in this particular case made those findings of fact. And as you've mentioned, he's the fact finder. So he says, when Ms. Perry testified, we believed her. We believed her witnesses. We believed her. And apparently disbelieved Ms. Snipes. And that he found that these particular things were proved by clear and convincing evidence, yet went on to award custody to mom. I think that's the issue that the circuit court had. I wouldn't be here if the letter opinion had read differently. If he said, we hadn't proved that.
So can you point out to us in the letter opinion then where he essentially, if you will, the trial judge, the fact finder, says too much in the sense that he is saying he's finding certain things that conflict with his overall holding. In other
sure.
words, his analysis, because he says X and Y, he's wrong as a matter of law.
Sure. On the second end, and I think that his actual letter opinion may be miscited, but the second and third page of the letter opinion where he goes on to talk about in the exposure to the child in utero of heroin and the opiate treatment medication. That's on page 2. The exposure of the child of hepatitis C, the failure to get the child vaccinated, driving with the child in her lap, which we had a video of that was played at trial. When he finds that all of these things are factual, when he goes on to say...
Some people don't believe in vaccinations. I think they're crazy,
that.
But does that mean that we have to take their kids away from them?
I don't believe, no, on its face, but it's certainly hepatitis C. I would say...
And kids get exposed to all manner of diseases, sometimes negligently by the parents... And we don't generally
Correct.
Take their kids away from them for that either. So.
But the issue is that she didn't even seek to see if this child had hepatitis C so she could seek treatment of that, which is a very serious disease. When he goes on to say that she relied on Ms. Perry to provide adequate care for this child, that judge is on... let me see. That's on page 3 of the letter opinion. When she talks about the fact that the mother had a sporadic contact with the child, despite the fact that she had ordered visitation. When she goes on to talk about...
the trial court found that the child had not actually been harmed while in the mother's care, and the mother was currently capable of caring. Those are explicit factual findings in the opinion. or in the record at page 29, why aren't we bound by those?
Judge, as I've stated in my brief, I think the issue is that the judge made those statements essentially as a conclusion, but then made individual findings of fact that disputed his own conclusion. In fact, when I was reading the letter opinion, it's almost as if the first part of the letter opinion didn't match up with the second part of the letter opinion. The actual conclusions didn't match with his findings of fact.
Well, I think it's fair to say, and I'm not suggesting that this is necessarily enough, but I think it's fair to say that the circuit court pointed to a lot of Snipes' conduct prior to the birth of the child, and noted that there were substantial differences in her conduct subsequent to the birth of the child. Not necessarily, you would argue, probably enough behavioral change to amount to anything, but
I would disagree with you, Your Honor. The many of the findings of fact that the court made were after the child had been born. The only finding that I remember, or comment that the court made, was that she had been using heroin since she had been in the 10th grade with the father of the child. Many of these findings of fact, Judge, are everything that happened after this child had been born. And so I disagree with that analysis of the
court. Well, the trial court found she made all of her supervised visits, married a Marine, continued to reside with her husband and daughter. I mean, whether that's enough or not, I guess, is up for debate. But
correct.
those are certainly arguably positive things the court cited in support of its decision. So, again, I mean, the quandary for us, as Judge Atlee pointed out, is how do we avoid just reweighing all of this to get to where you want it without, you know, in order to get to where you want us to go?
Again, Judge, I rely on his letter opinion, had his conclusions not found.
But we have to say your conclusions, we didn't draw those same conclusions, therefore you're
from your findings of fact. I mean, they're his findings of fact, which is what I'm partially.
But we'd have to say that in every single case where similar findings of fact were made as a matter of law, they're an unfit parent.
If the facts and circumstances of another case were nearly identical to this, the answer would be yes.
Okay, thank you.
Judge, I think the other issue is that on the special facts and circumstances, very quickly, that he essentially found that there had to be actual harm. That's not the way that I read the case law in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and the case law that's come down from this Supreme Court. He very specifically mentioned that there had been no actual harm. He cited in the letter opinion a Norfolk Circuit Court case that he was relying on. I haven't found any case law that I'm aware of from this court or the Supreme Court where that has been the holding of the court as to the law in this Commonwealth. I take issue with that as well. I think that's certainly a legal issue that the court needs to address in its opinion, that if that's to be the law, then certainly I believe that would be a case of first impression for this court to say that when the Supreme Court said special facts and circumstances, that it really meant actual harm. That is nowhere that I've seen. And so I believe that that would be a unique issue for this court to take up on this appeal specifically. I will yield the rest of my time to the guardian ad litem.
Thank you, Mr. Tittleman. Mr. Working.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please, the court. My name is John Working. I'm guardian ad litem for Kent Eldridge. And it is the position of the guardian ad litem that Kent not have to suffer actual harm before the parental presumption is overcome. To address a point earlier, the parental presumption is overcome by any of five ways. And I heard an earlier counsel in a different case make the point that the standard is one that is disjunctive. There's a very large or. It's my opinion that Ms. Snipes was both unfit and that there were extraordinary circumstances that would help overcome the presumption. However, in this case, if this court is not in a position to determine whether or not Ms. Snipes was unfit, we're still in a position to determine whether or not the review was proper, that Kent have to suffer actual harm prior to overcoming the parental presumption. I think that's bad policy for the children of our Commonwealth. And I think that even in this case, in this particular fact, Kent did actually suffer actual harm, as cited in the trial court's letter opinion. He was breastfed while his mother was consuming alcohol. That happened after he was born, obviously. She was neglectful of his medical care. whether it be the hepatitis C or getting up to date on vaccinations. She didn't cite any religious reasons that would overcome that presumption. She just didn't do it. She was out of his life for weeks at a time with no contact, relying on other people to care for his needs. And after, you know, this going on for years, Judge, the period of time between when the circuit court trial should have concluded, but it ran long, there were 115 days where essentially Ms. Snipes got to read the tea leaves and say, okay, now I understand what I have to do. I'll go be a good person for 115 days. But for the entirety of a child's life up to that point, Judge, there were other facts and circumstances that constituted an extraordinary reason for that child to be in Ms. Perry's care. It was absolutely in his best interest. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Working? All right, Mr. Working, we appreciate, again, your service as a guardian ad litem.
Thank you.
All right, we will greet counsel.